This programme was previously broadcast live on Love Sport Radio, so some items may be out of date. For more podcasts or to listen live, visit lovesportradio.com.
You are listening to the Bell and Sperling Show, minus the bell, plus the cow. So minus the bell, plus the cow. How are you, Cal?
I'm very well, mate.
Are you enjoying yourself?
I am. I'm having a lovely time.
You're having a lovely time?
It's a lovely, lovely time.
Having a lovely time. He's having a lovely time. Yes, I'm having a lovely time, too.
Good.
Listen, Cal, we've got to talk about the Ashes.
Oh, I know. Do we have to? It's painful.
It is very, very painful indeed. And I'm sure that our guest is going to say exactly the same thing. Because England made the absolute least of a difficult situation at Edgbaston yesterday by being bowled out for 146 just an hour after lunch. At least it might have been a decent lunch. This is the first time England have lost to the Aussies in Edgbaston in any form of cricket since 2001. And we are joined by a very unhappy Adam Shergold. Am I right, Adam?
Morning.
Am I right?
Yeah, you're spot on there.
Sorry, Adam, you're from the... You're on the Ashes Live blog for Mail Online. So, oh, my God, what have you reported this morning?
I know, to make matters worse, not only did I have to follow it, I had to type out every single depressing moment yesterday.
Oh, my goodness me. Oh, listen, I mean, with England looking to bat out the day, they weren't doing too badly at 60 for one. But then Jason Roy showed his inexperience and charged up the pitch to swing and be bowled by Leo. I mean, it's just, I can't even read it. It's awful. The last match he played at Edgbaston, he hit Steve Smith for three consecutive sixes at the World Cup. Does this show the risk of bringing in a one-day player to open the batting? The risk, I'm sorry. Does this show the risk of bringing in a one-day player to open the batting?
It does. Yeah, first of all, what a way to burst that World Cup bubble, by the way.
I struggled reading it, I'll tell you.
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know what kind of shot it was playing. I was seeing it was mentioned this morning that it's one of the worst shots ever played in an England Test match. Yeah, that's the trouble, isn't it? I mean, he's just got to kind of curb that natural instinct to come down the track and just whack everything for six. I mean, it worked during the World Cup. During a Test match, just doesn't work in the same way. He's got to learn very quickly if he wants to keep his place. Especially at the top of the order, it was not a day to be hitting three consecutive sixes. Mm. It was a day to stay back, get your bat down, and just block, block, and block. And unfortunately, he was just totally undone by that Nathan Lyon ball and just showed a tiny bit of inexperience there. Brilliant one-day player, as we all know.
Yeah.
Bit of work to do to become an England Test opener.
Hi, Adam. It's Cal here. One of the reasons England struggled was the target set by Australia, largely due to Steve Smith. I know that's like swearing to you. I'm very, very sorry about that. But why were England's bowling attacks so ineffective against him?
Yeah, they were just ground into the dirt, really. Well, not just by Smith, but by about four other players as well. To be honest, after the first day, the pitch died a bit and then they sort of ran out of ideas. There were bowlers short. Obviously, Jimmy Anderson was not able to bowl and just goes to show what a big difference he makes in, because he can usually get something out of the pitch and out of a shapeless ball, whatever the situation. Without him, they looked a bit bereft of ideas. You know, there's Moeen Ali particularly was punished. I think he got one wicket for about 140-odd or whatever it was in the end. Mm. Yeah, they just lacked that cutting edge and they just sort of ran out of ideas, especially to Steve Smith. I mean, fair enough. It's not the first bowling attack.
You know my song, Adam? Do you know my song? We hate Steve Smith, and we hate Steve Smith. We hate Steve Smith, and we hate Steve Smith. We hate Steve Smith, and we hate Steve Smith. We are the Steve Smith haters. I speak for everybody there tonight. In the first innings, England had reduced Australia to 122 for 8 at one point. I mean, at that moment, Australia's decision to bat first seemed like a bad one, didn't it? But could this have been different if England had won the toss?
I don't know, to be honest. Potentially, as you say, you know, during the afternoon session on Thursday, 122 for 8, it was looking brilliant, wasn't it?
Yeah.
So, you know, to be fair to them, it was a great fight back from there, and they just had one exceptionally gifted player, and he may be a cheat, but he is a very good player.
He certainly is there, isn't he, Adam? Yeah.
He was the Hollies stand at Edgbaston were mocking him with all kinds of songs. I mean, I've particularly enjoyed the "We Saw You Cry on the Telly" chant, which you know, obviously completely failed to put him off his stride at all. Mm. He obviously was able to block that out. And the next thing you know, he's made 280 runs and completely battered us out of the game. We need to find a solution. We need to find a way to get him out. The only thing I can maybe think is that Joffre Archer might have something up his sleeve for the next test if he comes in.
It's a big sleeve, Adam.
Yeah, a big 90 mile per hour. I don't know. They need an answer and quick. But, you know, not the first team to struggle against Smith. And won't be the last. And just hope that they get their heads together over the next week or so, and just come up with something a little bit different, a little bit quirky to maybe get him out.
Well, Adam, let's have a look at the selection for the second test. Where do you stand on Moeen Ali? Because in the last 12 months, he's taken more wickets than anyone in Test cricket, I think. And he was dreadful, absolutely dreadful at Edgbaston. So where do you stand on him?
Do you know what? After he failed with the bat the second time, I really, really wanted him to come in and take, you know, five wickets yesterday and redeem himself, keep his place. He's a popular character, very likeable guy. But unfortunately, I have to say, you know, his batting is completely gone. I think he's averaged 10 in his last sort of 8 or 9 innings. Obviously not good enough for that level. And, you know, I think unfortunately in this day and age, you need to be able to do both in his position. If one element is sort of that poor, it's hard to make a case for keeping him for the next test. I think he needs to go away and just get his head together, to be honest, for a test or two. I'm not ruling him out of the rest of the series. I think someone else probably deserves a chance now, whether that is Jack Leach, who did so well against Ireland, or whether an extra seamer comes in, or, you know, whatever. I think Mo probably just needs to go away, maybe go to the county championship, get a few runs under his belt, just get his game back together.
Yeah.
And then he'll be...
I thought he was going to say he needs to go away and not come back.
No.
Well, we've talked about the top of the order already. I mean, many feel Jason Roy needs more of a chance. Rory Burns did himself good with a century in the first innings. I mean, is Joe Denley the man who could lose out amongst the top order batsmen?
Yeah, I think he's probably the most vulnerable at the moment. As you say, Rory Burns should keep his place after that brilliant first innings century. I think Jason Roy will get another chance. Denley probably would be the fall guy, and everyone move up a little bit up the order to make room for either an extra bowler or, you know, Sam Curran or someone like that to come in, you know, someone who can bat as well. He obviously didn't get the score he would have wanted, but I think there is certainly a future for him in the team, maybe not in the next game.
Adam, I don't know whether this helps or hinders the situation, but England don't have the best record against Australia at Lord's, do they? And that is proved with the World Cup that we won. Can we just remember that we won that?
We won that. That was a different cricket team, wasn't it?
Will they be asking the groundsman to leave a bit of grass on the pitch for the second test to give the medium pace bowlers a bit more of a threat?
I think we need all the help we can get at Lord's, to be honest. We never win there. We got skittled by Ireland there. it's worrying. You know, Edgbaston was the fortress. Fortress has been well and truly breached. And we need to respond. I mean, you know, obviously there are some positives. Chris Wokes always does well at Lord's. He needs to keep his place, I feel. Obviously, Joffre Archer remains an unknown quantity in Test matches, but I think you know, he'll certainly give us something, as he showed during his brilliant World Cup. That'll be an important toss to win on the first morning if there is green on the pitch and we can have a bowl, have a go at them. They showed a lot of vulnerabilities, especially David Warner and Cameron Bancroft, the other cheats. They faltered, didn't they? So there is hope still. But yeah, it's not been a happy hunting ground for England, has it? And being that it's our most prestigious place to play cricket, it's not too promising.
Look, finally, the previous two World Cup winners before England, Australia and India, both lost their next test match after that one-day triumph. I mean, do you see England, you know, can they buck the trend and bring this one back?
You're saying they're hungover. Well, I hope so. You know, it's our biggest series. You know, there's still four games to play. Let's not abandon all hope yet. I mean, it would have been obviously ideal to get off to a winning start. Edgbaston, where we always seem to win. That's obviously not happened. I didn't know that stat, to be honest. You know, presumably there is some kind of effect there, and there's a lot of crossover in terms of the players. I wouldn't give up all hope just yet. We can come roaring back at Lords, get Joffre in the team, a few changes to the order, and hopefully...
I've got to ask you, just before we go to a break, Adam, you know, can we bring this one back? It's possible, right? Of course it is.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, of course it is.
Yeah,
don't abandon hope yet.
No, absolutely. Well, you know, it's the English way, isn't it? Listen, let's hope we've got better times in the next few weeks with the cricket. It's Adam Shergold. Thank you very much.
Thank you, John.
He runs the Ashes live blog for Mail Online. It could have been a good morning from this morning, Cal. I'll tell you that. I can tell you that right now.
From Ali to Zaha, we've got it covered. Love Sport Radio.
He's right, you know, Cal. Synchronized swimming is not good.
Not good.
Do you like it?
I've never watched it, to be honest.
Yeah, it's just synchronized swimming.
Well, I watched a movie with Rob Brydon. I'm not going to lie to you.
Oh, him and it.
He did
one.
A swimming
I
one.
To see that. Is it
it's quite good?
Yeah, it's quite good. He's a good actor, isn't he?
He's very good. Very, very good.
Listen, Cal, Derby won their opening championship game away at Huddersfield last night, thanks to two first-half goals from Tom Lawrence. So, yes, we are joined by Richard Cusack, who's DCFC Live. Quite happy, aren't you, Richard?
Hi, guys. Yeah, it was a really, really, really good way to start the season.
Yeah,
I said something similar when Frank Lampard got his first win. Obviously, that late goal at Reading last year. It's always important to get that first win because obviously, you go in your new manager, any manager, you go a few games into the season without that win, it soon starts with a millstone around your neck. So,
yeah.
It's a very encouraging performance to boot as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
Richard, before we want to chat a bit of Wayne Rooney as well, but before we do that, were you concerned going into the Huddersfield game? Obviously, with Huddersfield being former Premier League, was that a concern to you at all?
Yeah, of course. Huddersfield have got some top players. I was a bit disappointed about Huddersfield last night because what I thought, we've got Aaron Moy. He was outstanding two or three seasons ago when they got promoted. Alex Pritchard as well. They've got some very good players. I thought they came at Derby with pace early on, but they never seemed to have any end product. I can't remember Keller Roos apart from an excellent save straight after at half time. I think Kachunga might have blasted an effort over. There was a lot of effort, but not much end product from Huddersfield. So yeah, to be honest, I was a bit disappointed by them. But I thought to be fair, Derby nullified them very well. So it wasn't a case of Huddersfield not turning up on the night. I thought Derby. Philip Cocu tactically got everything spot on.
Apparently, Wayne Rooney's just arrived at Derby's training ground and he's moved to Pride Park with his deal at the Championship Club due to begin in January. That's breaking news, isn't it?
Yeah, it's something that we will win, to be honest. Obviously, the story broke yesterday.
Yeah.
Rooney landed at Heathrow around, I think about 6:30, 7:15 this morning. He was obviously photographed at the baggage carousel about an hour later, and then he's been heading up to the Midlands by car, the information we've had. And obviously, Mel Morris, the owner, has been on another radio station this morning. He says he's confident, he hopes to get the deal done. He'd be joining as a player coach now, obviously, we know that.
Yeah, but Richard, the thing is, player coach is a weird title, isn't it? Coach, do you know what I mean? So, with that in mind, how much do you reckon he'll actually be playing in the Championship?
To be honest, it really is bizarre, like you say, player coach. You'd assume that Rooney is going to want to play. He's 33, he's 34 this year, so he's still obviously got legs in the tank. He was only playing Premier League football the season before last, so he's obviously got a lot left to give still. I think it'd be really interesting to see Rooney in the Championship. I mean, that's a sentence that I never thought I'd see, let alone see him play for Derby. But obviously, he's going to come in, he's going to want to do his coaching badges alongside that, but he will come in to play and whether he starts in centre mid like he was playing for Everton, because he obviously lost a bit of pace in his latter stages of his career, or whether he starts up front, because let's be honest, that old adage, you know, these top players, when they drop down a couple of leagues, they always say the first 5 yards of pace are in your head. I back Rooney to steal a march over any Championship centre back, and it's just going to be fascinating, as it always is at Derby. Every year it's always fascinating to see what happens. There's always so many storylines and little plots, subplots.
Yeah. I mean, what's your first impressions of Cocu, you know, the new manager? Cocu. I can't think of the sound of music. It's a great start, isn't it?
It really is, yeah. I mean, obviously, pre-season, the final game, the Rangers won, ended, I mean, if it were not for the keeper, Ruse, Rangers could have won by 5 or 6. He was outstanding that game. And obviously, I think the mood has been lifted somewhat because of the new signings they've got in. Matty Clark, who was exceptional last night on his Championship debut. He was bringing the ball out from the back. He was putting in vital interceptions. He was putting his body on the line to block shots. So instantly, Fikayo Tomori from Chelsea on loan last season, he was a big part of Derby's success in getting to the playoff final last season. Although it ended in defeat, you know, everyone's kind of, if Matt Clark continues that sort of performance, you know, people will forget about Fikayo very soon. But Cocu seems to have, he hasn't reinvented the wheel. He's obviously got his own tactical sort of ideas and his own philosophy, but it's very similar to what Lampard employed, a 4-3-3 formation with fullbacks bombing on and a striker who wants to hold the ball up and inverted wingers who drift in and find the space. And that's what worked so well for Tom Lawrence last night. So it's not a massive departure from what we saw last season, but a bit of fine tuning from a manager and a head coach in Cocker, who's been around the game for years and years. It's going to be interesting to see what he does.
Richard, going back to what you just said then regarding Tom Lawrence, the 2-1 win last night, great finishes from Tom Lawrence. How important is he going to be for you this season?
It's going to be really important. He scored 6 goals last season, 7 the year before. I think he cost around 6 or 7 million a couple of seasons ago. Tom has admitted it, so he's never quite hit the heights that were expected of him, but ran a story online the other day with a really good sit-down interview with him. You know, let's not forget, he's had 3 managers in 2 years now, and Gary Rowett, Frank Lampard. It's hard to settle as a player. It's hard to adjust every year to a different tactical sort of style. And where I think Tom really flourishes is when he's given a free role in that number, almost like that number 10, 10 position, where he doesn't have the defensive duties, he doesn't have to track back, he doesn't have to work as hard on the ball. But when he gets it, when he gets the ball, he gets it in a position that matters, and that's when he's bearing down on goal. And he found for the first goal, for example, I know it was a mistake from Elphick, and he was obviously put in a sticky situation, but Lawrence was there, and normally you'd find him out wide. He was there, and he was in that position.
Doesn't matter about a mistake, does it? It's good placement from Lawrence.
Exactly, and for the second goal, it was very much similar as well. He found that he drifted into that space, and he's got a really good shot on him. So if you can get him into the position, he'll score 9 times out of 10. He's that good. But too often he's been on the periphery of games. But last night he seemed to be in the thick of it. And if Cocu can get the best out of him in that sense, then it's going to be like a new signing for Derby.
Yeah, absolutely. If we have a quick word about the Chelsea fans, they're starting to talk about Frankie Ball. We've had Sarri Ball, we've got Frankie Ball they're talking about now.
Yeah.
So, did you see evidence of Frank's own style when he was at Derby last year?
I think what we saw last year, which we saw similar to what, obviously like I've touched on before, Cocu hasn't departed too far from what the foundations Lampard laid. What I liked about Lampard more than anything was he always outlined it wasn't possession for possession's sake, it was possession for the purpose, moving the ball quick, defenders bringing the ball out, getting midfielders on the ball. Lampard wasn't scared to play Harry Wilson in centre midfield. That worked really well. He didn't stick it. Some players were not always playing in their conventional positions. I think also what we've seen as well, you know, the likes of Mason Mount were allowed to flourish because they were afforded so much space because they had midfielders who were doing the work for them. And I think with what impressed me most about Lampard as well was his ability to change system as well. He often employed a 4-4-2 diamond at Leeds in the Ellen Road second leg. It worked wonders, obviously. He switched to a 4-1-4-1 at West Brom in, ironically, a 4-1 win in October last year. I do loathe to use the term Frankie Ball, but if that's what we're going to call it, Frankie Ball to me is an ability to use a fluid systems and not just pigeonhole yourself into one formation, which has often been the sort of a death knell for many a manager. And I didn't see too much of it. Sorry, Chelsea, but it sounded like it was similar to that last year.
Yeah, I mean, I was going to ask you, what was the general feeling about Lampard? I mean, would he be really fondly looked upon, you know, or that he deserted the ship, you know?
Let's just say that when... I don't think there's not a lot of ill feeling. There certainly isn't the ill feeling that was afforded to Gary Rowett when he left. But let's just say a lot of Derby fans were annoyed when Rowett left, that they weren't so annoyed because Derby were doing so well under Lampard. So Lampard, for Lampard's sake, it's probably good that Cocu does well, because Derby fans will forget about that very quickly. Do you see what I mean?
Yes, sir. Yes, I do. Yes, I do. Absolutely. Listen, could, you know, I mean, Rooney be the magic ingredient for Derby?
I mean, it's interesting because obviously Ashley Cole, I know he's a left back, but he came in and his role off the pitch was massively credited. When I think the young fullback Derby, got Jaden Bogle, he said that Ashley Cole helped him in the training ground. I mean, if you're a striker, a young striker, take Jack Murray, even Martin Waghorn, who's approaching, you know, 28, 29, 30, his late 20s, he's going to be out on the training pitch having extra practice sessions with Wayne Rooney. I mean, it's a dream come true, isn't it?
We've seen the influence of John Terry, haven't we, of course?
Yeah, a lot of these older pros who drop down into the Championship, or, you know, they have an awful lot to give still, especially when they're passionate about doing their coaching badges or getting into management. It's invaluable, really. No matter how much really plays, I think it's going to be invaluable for players just to learn off a top pro, to be honest.
Absolutely. Richard, finally, we must talk about Dwayne Holmes as well. He's called out about racial abuse on Twitter last night. Now, racism in football has had quite a lot of publicity, particularly in recent years with the England squad and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Is there a danger that outside the Premier League, this kind of thing can be overlooked?
I don't think so. I think with, obviously, the news agenda these days, there's that much 24-hour role in news, social media. Stuff does get called out pretty quickly, and people are quick to condemn, and obviously it's on the authorities now to deal with that. And obviously, I think Dwayne was a subject of racial abuse at an away game at Brentford last season as well. So obviously, just an absolutely horrible, my thoughts are with him, of course, and his family. It's just a horrible thing for anybody to have to go through, and to be honest, it's just disgusting. I can't believe, my own personal view is I can't believe we're still at this stage right now that sort of thing is happening, but it has happened, and it's now on the authorities to sort it out.
But you say it's the authorities, but do you think the club have got a duty of care as like an aftercare sort of thing, and that sort of stuff?
Yeah, of course there'll be sort of, there's always player liaison and stuff at clubs, and obviously he'll be well looked after. And I thought it was very brave of Dwayne to call it out, actually.
Yeah, absolutely, it was. Yeah, it was, most
and
definitely.
That shows. And he's obviously a very strong-minded. He's one of the lads who has a lot of banter on the social media and stuff. And he's obviously not a shrinking violet by any imagination. He's obviously very confident in himself. And I'm glad that he felt. Glad that he did that.
Absolutely.
Because he was but he wasn't afraid to call it out.
It's important that they all do that when this happens. It can't be swept under the carpet anymore. You know, every time it happens, there's got to be a big, you know, big noise about it. Otherwise, nothing's going to get done about it. Listen, but on a positive note, Richard, you won. Nobody realised that you was going to beat Huddersfield, I don't think. I think you went in totally as the underdogs, really. You know, I mean, it's just come down for the Premiership. And I think it's one in the eye for old Lampard, don't you? See us? We're doing fine, mate. We're doing fine without you.
Well, I think many a Derby fan will tell you that let's not get too... if you know anything about Derby County over the last few seasons, let's not get too sort of hung up on the first.
I know.
Let's
concentrate
what happens from February onwards.
Okay. Well, anyway, listen, enjoy that win while it's going on at the moment. Richard Cusack, DCFC Live, thank you very much indeed.
Giving your team a voice. Love Sport Radio.
You are back with the Bell and Sperling Show, listening to the Bell and Sperling Show, minus the bell, plus the cow.
Hey, thank you very much indeed. Can I remind everybody of our themes?
What are you trying to take over there?
No, I just want to.
What's going on here? You've come and you've been here an hour. And of course you can.
Thank you very much. Please. We're talking about which former legends have joined your club. Yeah. We're also asking...
You did it then. Did you hear it? Did you hear you do the radio thing?
So,
joined your club. You see?
Former legend has joined your club? We're also asking, what is your phobia? What are your phobias? What are you scared of? And also, Wayne Rooney. Big talking point with Wayne Rooney. He's gone to Derby.
He's come out of Norway.
He's come from nowhere. So,
do you know what you're doing? You're doing the 3 hour thing. We're nearly on three hours, and you just start losing it a bit.
A little bit. Just a little bit. But you can get in contact with us, 0208 70 2558.
Got a jingle for that.
You can WhatsApp us on 0208 70 2558. What's the number?
0208. 70 20 558.
Not used enough.
Or you can tweet us. You can tweet us at Love Sport Radio as well.
You can tweet us, but I hate tweets. I can't stand them. Do you like tweets? Do you understand tweets. Instagram? I don't get it.
It's pictures. Pictures and videos.
Is it?
Yeah.
But why is it? Why is it, tell me, that it? Someone sends me an Instagram, it comes up, and I go to look at it, and it's gone.
I think your Instagram's broken, Johnny.
No. No, apparently they do these ones where it's just up for a minute and then goes.
Oh, I don't know.
Is that right, Laurie? Producer Laurie?
I have no idea. Absolutely no idea.
I can't stand Instagram.
I can't do Twitter. I like Facebook. I like my Facebook page.
Yeah, I love Facebook.
I chat with people on Facebook page.
Yeah. Oh, do you?
Yeah. Just going to brag here. Over 10,000 people follow me on Facebook.
That is a brag. It's a name drop.
It is. And I like chat with people on there. It's great fun. Great fun. Because they always ask for impressions, you see. That's the thing. So a little bit of David Beckham. A bit of Stephen Gerrard.
Andy Murray as well. Loads and loads. Loads.
Listen, yesterday Brighton announced the signing of Brentford striker Neil Maupay for £20 million. £20 million. That's not bad. We've got A.D. Packham from Albion Roar. He joins us now. A.D., how old are you, my friend? You're not there.
Have we got him?
He's not there.
Have we lost him?
I'll tell you what.
We'll see if we can get him back
He's got the hump.
Yes, absolutely. But yes, you're absolutely right. Neil Maupay is signed for Brighton for £20 million. £20 million. Do you know, gone are the days where the likes of Newcastle United signed Alan Shearer for £15 million. That was a world record.
Is it really?
World record transfer.
Yeah, but it was 40 years ago.
It was Newcastle, though. We had the world record, Johnny.
What, are you ever going to get it back?
What, Shearer?
No, Newcastle.
I hope so, but the problem is...
Do you know what? Newcastle's one of those things, isn't it, where you want those clubs... You want Newcastle back up there.
Yeah.
You want the classic Newcastle.
Newcastle. And this is going to be very controversial, and I know producer Laurie is a Newcastle fan as well. However, I feel sorry for Sunderland on the sole reason of, I live in the North East, I want the North East to do well, and clubs like Sunderland...
Yeah.
The city around there relies so much on that football club, and it's terrible when something like that happens. Have we got Eddie back?
We've got Eddie back. I thought you had the ump, Eddie, and went away there. You're back now.
No, I'm definitely here.
How are you, my friend? Good afternoon to you.
I'm very well. How are you? All right.
Yes, I'm very well. Now, what do you think about this the new signing for £20 million?
Yeah, well, it's an interesting one. I mean, it wasn't one that was particularly on my radar. And obviously, we've had to do a bit of research into it. But, I mean, it's a player that the club's been looking at for a very long time. I mean, one of the most amazing things is the fact that we've actually done business with Brentford, which we thought would never happen again. Due to the two chairmen of the respective clubs not particularly seeing eye to eye on things, but
he's scored a lot of goals, hasn't he? I mean,
he has scored a lot of
95
goals.
Games, but I mean, can he do that in the Premier League? Do you think?
Well, I mean, from what we've seen of him, the guy's a bit of a menace. it looks a bit like a cup price Aguero. I've heard him described as today.
It's a shame his name's not Dennis.
Yeah.
Dennis the Menace there.
There can't be too many Frenchmen called Neil, to be honest. But it's, it's an interesting one. I mean, the thing with us is at the moment, Everything is all very much up in the air. We're not quite sure. We've got what's happening with the new manager. He's got his new ideas. It looks like we're going to start playing three at the back. Obviously, we've traditionally played with a target man, with Glenn. Is more Pay going to fit in and around that? He doesn't look like he's a traditional player that holds the ball up well when in that sort of system. But then we're not quite sure what system Graham Potter's going to play. So it's an intriguing one for us. It's an exciting one for us. And the fact that, when you look back, we've come a long way in a very short space of time. And the fact that we're now playing like 20 million quid for strikers now, which it's like, you know, when we're back with Dean, you know, that would have kept us going for about 5 years. So
yeah,
it's intriguing.
It's funny, isn't it, AD? I was just saying just before we spoke to you, I was speaking to Johnny, is that I'm a Newcastle United fan, and gone are the days of the world record being 15 million for Alan Shearer. Do you know what I mean? And I used to know roughly how much a player would be worth. I'd see a player and I go, yeah, he's going to be in ballpark of this figure.
No idea.
It's ridiculous, and I miss those days. And I think it's going to get to the point where the bubble is actually going to burst, because there isn't an infinite amount of money. Mm. All this money that's coming in for the TV, is that bubble going to burst at some point? It's got to. And then, when it upsets me when you're seeing clubs like Bury struggling to like pay the players. We were in that situation ourselves just over 20 years ago. So, it's like, when you're seeing all this big money, £85 million for Maguire, for instance, it's just, when you look at that and then you're seeing, clubs in the fourth and third tiers, struggling to, pay £200,000 just to keep afloat for a year, it's a rarefied atmosphere in the top league, and it's not one that... With a social hat on, it sits comfortably. But that's the world we live in.
Absolutely. I'm going to try and wind you up a little bit here now, Eddie. I'm going to try and wind you up. Right. Okay. So Chris Hughton left the club at the end of last season. Do you reckon you're the worst club not to be relegated since Hull in 2009?
No.
Bearing in mind Newcastle's still in the Premier League, let's remember that.
Our Newcastle's still going to be in the Premier League next come the end of
this
season.
I'll take that. It's been harsh.
With that much sought after manager Steve Bruce at the helm, when you're looking at us, there's a small club like Crystal Palace, which is could be struggling this year. The second half of the season under Chris wasn't great.
Why do you think that was?
I don't know. It's just it almost happened on the turn of the year when we were 2-0 up and cruising at West Ham, and then we all of a sudden we were pegged back to 2-2, and then a couple of days later we were 2-0 up again and cruising against Fulham and ended up losing 4-2, and I think doubt started to creep in with some of the players' minds. There was possibly a couple of managerial mistakes made at that particular moment in time, maybe. But it was, they kind of lost their mojo and lost the stability and the will not to lose, if you know what I mean. It was, I don't know. I mean, Chris was... He's got one of the greatest records of any Albion manager, and he's still never been relegated from the Premier League.
Yeah.
The method of dispatch kind of didn't go down too well within the whole football industry, I guess, because he's got this reputation of being the nicest man in football, hasn't he? But yeah. We weren't surprised that he went. To be honest, but we ended up with 36 points. That's not normally enough to keep you up, and it was quite a difficult watch for the second half of the season. But that's football, and we've got an exciting new manager now.
Yes,
and the rest of the Premier League is probably by thinking, oh my God, they've just appointed a manager from the Championship, a young English manager from the Championship. And if this works, then that sends shockwaves around the rest of the country, saying, well, actually, maybe we can actually do that as well. And for the sake of British football, and you know, someone's going to have to replace Gareth Southgate at some point. I'm not saying it's going to be Potter, but there's got to be a progression of young managers coming through and be given that opportunity. And there's been two managers appointed from the Championship this year. Admittedly, one of them, Frank Lampard, which was always going to happen by the looks of it. But it could be a risky strategy. The bookmakers have got us down as relegation certainties. I don't think so. I'm not seeing that at all. We're looking at trying to at least replicate our highest ever finish.
Yeah. Well, listen, you've got another new signing, Leandro Trossard. I mean, has he looked in pre-season?
He's been looking good. Obviously, we were shocked to see Anthony Knockaert go.
Yeah.
But he's come in. He looks to be better than Knockaert.
Yeah.
So if that's the case, he's more skillful. He's got a better delivery. He's been earmarked as a potential replacement for Eden Hazard at some point. So, you know, he captained an unfancy Genk team to the Belgian title last year. You know, we go shopping in Lidl's at the end of the day.
Not Aldi.
Well, you know,
both the same,
isn't
it?
There's some good bargains to be had there as well.
I prefer Lidl because Lidl has got more of the Polish stuff, and I like all that. Sauerkraut and all that. I love that.
Yeah, but I mean, basically, whilst you've got like the top going to Fortnum and Mason and Harrods, and maybe even Waitrose. It's you know, we can't afford to shop in those sort of places, so we have to find the bargains elsewhere. So, and you know, I mean, there were some players that were brought in last season as well, which Chris probably didn't utilise as much as he probably should have. So we could see some new, the likes of Jahan Bash like make an impact this year. So we've already seen pre-season. The players seem to be playing with a smile on their face again.
If we look at your first three games, you've got Watford, West Ham, Southampton. They don't seem too difficult. You could start really well.
We could do. And we hope that we can actually get those 9 points on the board, and that will help us get on. But you know, it's a work in progress. The players have still got to get used to Graham Potter's methods. You know, I mean, we opened up the season at Watford last year as well, and it was a woeful performance last year there, so we want to eradicate that from our minds. Quite a lot, because it was horrible. But I mean, then again, the second game of last season, we had Man United at home and beat them, but then so did everyone else.
That wasn't exactly a task, was it, last season?
No. So the bookmakers have written us off, but we're quietly confident of a decent season. And you've got the relic, you've got the promoted tides from the Championship.
Norwich will be a tough side this season,
Norwich,
I reckon.
They'll be tough,
but I mean they will be in the bottom five at the end of the season. I would imagine.
Well predicted. Listen, you mentioned Harry Maguire before because we've got to go to a break in a minute. But the Lewis Dunk to Leicester rumours, they've all faded now, haven't they?
We're hoping the club's going to make an announcement at some point in the next day or so, just confirming that Lou's going to be the club captain for the coming season. You know, he's a Brighton boy. He loves the club, and it would take something exceptional to tempt him away.
Sorry, mate, we could have got to a break, but listen, have a great season. I really do. I like it up there in Brighton very much.
Yeah, well, come down, come say hello.
I certainly will do. Thank you very much. Have a good day. AD Packham there from Albion Roar.
For the fans, by the fans. Love Sport Radio.
I'm afraid of Americans. There we are. Are you afraid of Americans?
No, I'm not.
Particularly Nat Donald. I think he's a great guy. Such a great guy. I'm not scared of anybody. Scared of Hillary.
Listen, I'll tell you what. We're going to be, of course, you know, we've got Cal Albert here. He's like, you know, the man of a million voices.
About seven.
Is it right? So of course, in the, you're here for 3 weeks with us.
Yes, it's fun. That's a voice a week.
It's a voice a week.
That's a voice a
week. I'm very excited about this. We're going to be doing a quiz now, and joining us is Posh Boy. Posh Boy, who does well, he does drive now.
He does
drive.
I've been driving in my car. It's not quite a Jaguar.
Do you not know that one?
Well, I do now.
I can't imagine you're a Posh Boy. You don't like madness.
Well, I feel like if I heard that song on the radio, I wouldn't recognise it. I could probably get played it five times, and I would have no idea what it actually
song.
Was.
It's a good song.
Madness were great. Anyway, listen, we've got to talk about. We're going to do now. We're going to play the phobia quiz with producer Laurie. Hello, Laurie.
Hi there, Johnny.
Red lorry, yellow lorry.
I was just about to say that.
Red lorry, yellow lorry.
We don't normally have Laurie's voice on.
Yeah,
on
no, you don't hear too much from me normally.
No, we don't.
I'm not like Mike Hogg Wellington in the mornings. he's always putting his headphones on, bringing the mic down.
Yes.
No, it's quantity over quality.
Oh,
no, there's
headbangs at door. Okay, tell us about this quiz, please.
So basically, what I'm going to do is. I'm going to give you some phobias.
Yes.
And you essentially have to guess what they are.
Right.
So there's loads and loads of weird phobias. We've heard today, Eamon Holmes is scared of
being sick. So you're going to give us the name of them?
So I'm going to give you each a name.
Right.
And you have to guess what that phobia is.
Gotcha. The way it works, Johnny, is he's going to ask us all a sequence of questions, and at the end of it, you're going to lose.
Ooh, he's diving me to give him a little clout around the ear hole.
Do we know what the phobia for being scared of being sick is?
Do you know what? I actually haven't looked that one up.
I don't know that one.
But I actually also looked up Johnny's phobia. We know he's scared of lifts.
Yeah.
That one actually is just a form of claustrophobia or agoraphobia. It doesn't have its own signature name.
It doesn't.
No, unfortunately.
It's funny though, because I'm just afraid of lifts though.
Sees a lift and he goes,
but it's not.
What is it? Is it the music? Is it the mirrors?
The music or the mirrors?
Right, shall we start?
Yes, let's start.
Okay, who wants to go first?
I'll go first.
Okay, Johnny Sperling.
I'm in the hot seat.
So I'll try and give you the name and then a little clue for each one, because otherwise it will be impossible.
I'll need a clue.
All right. No clue. The first one is acluophobia.
Is the clue in the title or
no? Well, no. I guess it is if you know your Latin.
What? Oh yeah, I'm well up on my Latin.
Yeah, Johnny's Cambridge Latin, coming through there. He'll
Cambridge.
I'm going to need a clue.
What
is it called again?
It's acluophobia, and this is a very common one. So it should be easier.
Acluophobia, fear of cars.
That's incorrect, unfortunately, Johnny. I'm going to have to take that one away.
Okay. What's the clue?
No, you get one each, and if you get it wrong, then it's next one.
Can I suspect this is wrong. Does it have something to do with water?
It doesn't, Johnny, sorry.
Oh.
So that's actually the fear of darkness.
Fear of darkness.
Very common one, but Johnny gets it wrong. So from one Johnny to another, Johnny Burrow.
I haven't got a prayer here. Go on, then.
You said you know your Latin. How about this one?
Go on, then.
Hexacosioe-hexacontahexaphobia.
Fear of the number six.
Do you know what? That's actually quite close.
Six-sided
I'm almost
shapes.
inclined to give you it. It's the fear of the number 666.
Yeah.
Oh, well, the sign of the devil.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, do you know what?
A hexagon, right?
I'll give you half a point for that, Johnny.
All right. Thank
that was a quite an easy
Johnny
one,
moves.
That was
an easy Johnny
one. The clue was definitely in the question there.
Okay, next one. Cal Halbert.
The nation's favourite impressionist, apart from all the others. Yep.
Heliophobia.
Sorry?
Heliophobia.
Heliophobia. I'm scared that this is quite an obvious one that I don't want to fall into the trap of being quite a helio fear of being said hello to.
I thought you'd say fear of helicopters.
Yeah,
I was
going
to walk
gonna
out.
Fear of being said hello to.
Fear of being said hello to.
I'm afraid that's also wrong.
Yeah.
That one's sunlight. Helio.
Sunlight.
Like Helios, the god.
Oh, Helios. Oh,
right.
Yeah,
would you have got that, Johnny?
Of course, Cal. What's the matter with you?
Helios.
Come on. Highbrow show this one. Okay, number four. We're back round to Johnny Sperling.
Well,
sorry. I've got a Coftrophobia, I've got.
Taphophobia. I can actually imagine this one happening to you. Taphophobia.
Taphophobia. Tapho. It's a stab in the dark, isn't it? Taphophobia. Fear of tapestry.
No.
What is it?
That one is the fear of being buried alive.
Oh.
Why did you say you could imagine that happening to Sterling?
What would
he
happen
just
to
gets
me?
Into odd situations, doesn't he? I can just see
well,
it.
That is a very odd situation.
You'll never believe this, Cal. I only got buried alive. Can you believe it?
Okay, background to Johnny Burrow.
Oh, he went out for some bread.
Isoptrophobia.
Sorry, say it again. I couldn't hear over the children.
Isoptrophobia.
How are you spelling it?
E-I-S-O-P-T-R-O phobia. Isoptro phobia.
Look, that's made any difference.
I'm going to joke because I don't know the answer. Fear of fables.
That's a nice one, but it's wrong. It's fear of mirrors.
Fear of fables.
Fables. Aesop's Fables.
That's
I'm going to try and speed this up because we've got a lot to get through.
Oh, it's a perfect bathroom book, Aesop's Fables. Lovely
sure
sit down,
return
read a fable.
To that off air. Okay. Here's one for you, Cal. Myrmecophobia. That's
quite easy for you to say.
Myrmecophobia.
Scared of mermaids.
No, that's wrong. It's fish. Ants.
Fear
ants.
Of Russian ants. Names.
Fear of ants.
Fear of ants. What?
They're really small, aren't they? But apparently a lot of people have that one. Fear of ants. Very common.
Ants.
Yeah.
And deck.
We're not going to get one of these right.
Okay, here's one for you. Somniphobia. And this is something that, Johnny, that you complain a lot about. Not being scared of it, but not being able to get it. Somniphobia.
Somniphobia. Oh, that's the clues. Hang on a second, Johnny. You've got an idea, have you?
I think it's going to be something to do with insomnia, isn't it? Insomnia.
Yeah, it's got to be fear of sleep. Surely.
It's not.
It is the fear of sleep.
I was going to say it though.
Should have got on with it.
You know what? You're not meant to get a point for that, Johnny. But it's such a low-scoring game at the minute that I'm going to give you that on your tally.
You're one and a half points.
And now, in addition, you've also got your own question: venustrophobia.
Wait.
Ven, V-E-N-U-S-T-R-A, venustrophobia. Ah,
Fear of love.
No, Venetian masks.
Fear of masks.
One of those was close.
Is that fear of masks?
Venustrophobia is actually, and I don't know whether you've suffered from this one, Johnny, you can tell us, the fear of beautiful women.
Oh. Yeah, I wasn't far off. I do suffer from this, yeah. That's why I'm with my girlfriend.
I don't fear beautiful women. But I tell you, this is the truth.
They fear you, Johnny.
I'm a little bit kind of I go a little bit kind of doolally when I'm around a beautiful one. Don't know what to do. It's quite strange, actually.
Okay, I'm glad I'm not giving this one to Johnny Sperling. Oh. So I encourage you to not say your first thought on this one. I'm going to give you the spelling after I pronounce it.
Please do.
Phagophobia. P-H-A-G.
P-H-A-G. P-H-A-G. Fag. Phagophobia. Phagophobia. Can you use it in a sentence?
Yes.
I have
this
phagophobia.
This man suffers from phagophobia.
What's the clues? Are we having any clues?
I'll give you a clue for this one. The clue to this one is it involves food.
Oh, does it? Phagophobia. Scared of tomatoes.
Why would you be scared of tomatoes?
Might be.
That's wrong, unfortunately.
Well, do you know when you said
why would it have been tomatoes? You could have picked any food. You just went tomatoes.
I'd have figs or something.
Figs now.
Figs. Because it sounds like
figs. Yeah,
I don't know. That's fig phobia.
I don't.
What is it? What is it?
It's fear of swallowing phagophobia.
Wow. Swallowing phagophobia.
Do you know what? I can understand. I can get that fear. Because sometimes I go to swallow. This is the truth. Oh, shut up. Pair, you got filthy minds. Filth!
I don't know what you're talking about.
I think I'll move on from that.
Absolutely filthy.
Okay, this is the final round. So, just currently, I know the scores.
Johnny's one, isn't he?
The scores haven't come into it very much yet, but Johnny's currently on 1.5 points.
As Johnny Sperling.
And the rest are on 0. So, because that's an unassailable lead, this last one's worth 5,000 points.
Oh,
so,
excellent.
If you get one, you're probably going to win. Are you all right, Johnny?
I wasn't even thinking anything like that.
Okay, here we go. So, your final question, Johnny Sperling.
Yes.
Aphanphosmophobia.
Oh.
I love the way you made that noise as if you might know. Oh, I know this one.
Aphanphosmophobia.
I can't even say it. Aphanphosmophobia.
Yeah. And
a fear of the word Aiden.
I tell you what, you're scared of lifts. Someone stuck in a lift
might
get this fear.
Aphanphosmophobia.
If you're stuck in a lift with some other people, aphanphosmophobia.
Fear of crowded places.
Being eaten alive by other people.
Famously known as claustrophobia is being in small places. Eaten alive, I don't know what that is.
What is it?
Aphanphosmophobia is a fear of being touched.
Oh. Well. I've certainly got a fear of that.
Walking around. Well. Okay, Johnny Burrow, your final one.
Okay.
And you'll be getting a lot of this in the studio. Yeah. Halitophobia.
Ah, what is halitosis?
Bad breath.
Ah.
Ah, yes, it is.
Fear of bad breath.
Somehow you get that, Johnny.
Thanks, mate.
You're welcome.
5,001.5 points.
I've got stewards on that one. So, how can they bother calling that a fear? Everyone's got a fear of bad breath, haven't they? Don't want you coming near me if you've got bad breath. Go away.
You know, Julie Andrews set up a shop in Los Angeles that would tell you whether you got bad breath, and it was called Super California Mystic Expert Halitosis. Oh, if you're not laughing, you're learning. what's my last one, Laurie?
Okay, we'll remind that this is just for consolation, Cal.
Thank you.
And you won't get this, I don't think.
All right.
And if you do, I'll be very surprised.
Thank you.
Glossophobia.
Glossophobia. Glossophobia. Glossophobia.
You go for the obvious, can you?
Can I have a clue, please? As it's just
there are no clues.
There is. I've had a clue.
Your clue is that it would come up in your line of work, and you probably wouldn't do your line of work.
Oh, is it fear of talking to crowds?
Fear of public speaking. Well done, Kyle.
Did you know that fear of public speaking is the number one fear? Okay, number one fear, true, right? Yeah. And your number two fear is fear of death. So fear of death, right? So at a funeral, most people would rather be dead than give the eulogy. That's how it works.
Anyway, so recap of those scores.
Please.
Johnny Burrow's on 5,001.5 points.
Yes.
Cal's on 1 point. And Johnny's got 1 point.
Nothing.
Why did I get 5,000 points for my last question? And Cal got 1,000.
Oh, yeah, you got 5,000 as well. Sorry. You still lost by 1.5.
But hang on, given Cal gave me my 5,000 point one,
you could argue.
All right.
You can have it, mate. I don't mind. I'm out for you to win.
Well, I'll tell you what.
He went to Cambridge. All the points go to the top, don't they?
Every day we'll be playing a new game, I think. I like that. The games with Laurie. for God's sake. Go somewhere, Laurie. This is Love Sport. You've been listening to Ben and Sperling. We will sign out. Thank you very much.